I am biracial and present racially ambiguously, but I do have brown skin and can be perceived as anything from Indian to Latina to white with a tan to black. When I was admitted to the hospital to be induced for the birth of my second child, the white nurse was inputting my background information. I believe she was perceiving me as black because when it came to the part to put in information about my baby's father, she goes, "Same baby daddy as last time?" I was immediately offended by the term baby daddy and her lack of professionalism. I told her that if her question was whether my husband was also the father of this baby, then yes. When I made it a point to complain to more senior staff about the racial assumption that I had a baby daddy because I was black, I was dismissed and repeatedly told that the white nurse, quote, meant nothing by it and was just trying to be hip. I also asked for a new nurse and was denied because the hospital was short-staffed. She caused my whole labor to be distressing with her energy. She also did a cervical check on me that was extremely painful and proceeded to say that I wasn't as dilated as I actually was. She made me so anxious that it was hard to concentrate on pushing. I almost fatigued out, and my OB was one step away from using the vacuum to assist delivery. I fully believe my whole stressful, stalled labor experience was because of this racist ass nurse. Hi, I'm Zahn Velines, and this is the Liberating Motherhood Podcast. Today, we are talking about white women in the fight for racial justice. I'm here today with Desiree Stevens. Hi, Desiree.
Hello, Don. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so glad you're here. So, Desiree is my IRL very good friend. She is a friend of the show. I highly recommend reading and subscribing to her Liberation Education newsletter. She is a racial justice advocate, a decolonization counselor, and founder of Makeshift Happen, but she's also just sort of everything. She is so insightful. She has her hands in so many projects, and she's a wonderful person who we can all just learn so much from. She's been on the show before, so I won't spend a ton of time on her bio and will instead urge you to follow her on Substack, subscribe, and know that I'll put all of her info in the show notes, and you should definitely stalk her to all of the places because she's awesome. So thanks for being here, Desiree.
You are so wonderful. Thank you for being who you are in real life and online. I really value your friendship, your thoughts, and just the way you show up in this work in all of the ways that you do, and being so unafraid to put it all out there, right? Because there is a perception of how this work should be done, and I love that you seek to shock people. So, thank you. I love the show. I love you. I just love how you show up. So, thank you. And thank you for having me yet again on the show.
Well, thank you. It's just, Desiree, you're just wonderful. So before we get started, I want to do a little bit of an announcement. If you're a regular listener, you know that I'm experimenting with a more frequent pace of podcasting. So we're doing an episode a week, probably through the end of the year, to see how that goes. And I just want to kind of give everyone a reminder that if you like the podcast, the best way to support it is engagement. Algorithms look only at engagement. They don't look at whether you like something. They don't look at whether you post positively. They look at whether it keeps you there, keeps you clicking, keeps you typing. And so the best way that you can support feminist, anti-racist, leftist creators is by commenting, heart reacting, sharing. If you want to talk about something, actually talk about it. Post a comment publicly so that people can engage with you. And that goes for my work, that goes for Desiree's work. The best way that you can keep this work going is to engage. And of course, both of us have paid newsletters and we're able to do this work solely because of our paid subscribers. So if you really like it and you can afford to, please become a paid subscriber. So I'm going to give a little spiel about how Desiree and I ended up doing this episode. We've been talking a lot lately about like white women racial justice work, converting white women, pulling white women into the fold. And we've thrown out lots of ideas. And I finally said, well, I think that we should just have kind of an informal conversation about this on the podcast. In my line of work, what I often find is that I can draw conservative women into the leftist fold by helping them understand how feminism directly affects their lives. I think Desiree has a somewhat similar experience, but also something different happens with her, which is that White women who may identify as feminists and who often self-identify as allies often have behavior that undermines both of those identities and show their whole asses in their interactions with her. So we wanted to get together and talk about this group of women, a group of women of which I am part, because this group of women is unique. They have a deep and rich capacity to change the world. They are both victim and oppressor. But so often white women align with their whiteness rather than with their womanhood or their humanity because half of my people voted for Donald Trump. So, Des, why don't you talk about why we're talking about white women?
When are we not talking about white women?
I
Okay.
know.
Well, I'm going to turn around and say is that trying to think about how to lead in with this is that white women are for social change whilst white men are systemic change, right? So we are going to we're going to be around each other more, right? We're going to be in schools with each other, grocery stores with each other. We're going to be doing, mommy and me things more. So there's more interaction between Black women and femmes and moms with white women opposed to white men. So I think that that is why the topic always feels so woman heavy, and I know that that could be activating because it especially for white feminists, it gets activating because it's like, well, we're not responsible for men. We're not. Why is all the weight on women? Why is because it is like because welcome to the world that we live in, right? We are raising these children. We are sleeping with these men. So there is some level of responsibility as women, as a collective, that we have to hold. By all means, you could stop birthing and sleeping with these people, and a lot of these problems would go away. So there's that, right? That is why. Also, white women keep the tone of wanting to learn, grow more, the book clubs, the coffee meetups. When you're talking about white feminism and those intersections, now you're talking about also financial access. They have more time, they have more money. So these are usually the people that come into anti-racism work, social justice work, just wanting to understand and be a part of something. And they hit the wall at their feminism because patriarchy is the greatest albatross to their freedom. And why it doesn't cross over from my own experience and, as a whole, watching, experiencing, and understanding why that wall gets hit in that sort of way is because the socialization between white men and white women have been so exclusionary. I'm trying to like, is that a word? Like, it has been so isolating. So I'm like, there's a word here that I'm searching for. It has been so isolating, right? You guys have not been allowed to be socialized around anyone else. So white feminism, and I have this conversation often, is about either becoming equal to white men. Which then means you become the top tier oppressor of the globe. And that is where that, no, but I want, and I'm like, yes, but it leaves everybody else behind. What we need to be doing is dismantling the system that makes you the victim of it, as well as the perpetrator. So I hope that that kind of makes some sense. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, that does. One of the things that I appreciate you saying is I think white women often, and I do not agree with this sentiment, I want to be clear, but I think white women often feel aggrieved in leftist and anti-racist spaces because they have this thing of, well, why is everyone talking about how bad white women are when white men are objectively worse? And that part, that white men are worse, is true. But the reason that we're talking about white women is that white women are the ones who say they want to do better. White women are the ones who have come some of the way, at least as you mentioned, into feminism. And so I want people who are listening to this who might find themselves getting their hackles up and saying, well, why are we going so hard on white women? To remember that this is not going hard on white women. This is talking about what we as white women need to do better. And what all of us committed to social justice need to do to help bring more white women truly into the fold. Something that I'm seeing a lot is there's a shame reaction to being told that you are not behaving like an ally, that you're being racist, that you hurt someone's feelings. And we have basically two ways of dealing with shame as human beings. We can try to deflect that shame onto someone else and say, oh, no, you're bad for making me feel bad. And that's rooted in the idea that we just deserve to feel good, that we're entitled to not be told we're doing something wrong. Or we can sit in that shame and we can think about what we're doing. We can think about whether the criticism is fair, and then we can change our behavior. And this podcast is about that. It's about sitting in the shame and looking at ways where we can change our behavior and looking at ways where we can amplify our good behavior.
I like that. I like that. And I'm going, if they got their hackles up a moment ago, get ready, take a breath. Because from whose lens are white men worse?
Yeah.
Right? So when you're having that conversation, because yes, I often get that. And then I'm looking at them and I'm like, okay, but that's your perspective, right? When we're talking about being intersectional and not simply from the term that's been coined by Kimberly, but like being intersectional in a deeper, more intentional way, who says that they are worse? Because here's what it is, Zahn. I'm not going to deal with Jeff at school, right? I'm going to deal with you. Jeff is not going to befriend me. Jeff is not going to be the one inviting my children to birthday parties, school functions. Jeff is not on the PTA. He is not at the Homeowners Association. He is not in my social sphere and life, and I don't have as much access, exposure to him. Right. So this is what I mean by white women are in charge of social change, whilst white men are in charge of systemic change in that sort of way. So when white women say that to me, like white men are objectively worse, I'm like, to you, I don't have the same proximity to them. I'm not marrying them. I'm not raising them. I'm not even dating them. Right. So I don't have to deal with them in that sort of way. Systemically, they are absolutely worse. They have a systemic power over me and you. And that is being intersectional in that sort of way, right? So we do not experience them in our personal lives the same way that you guys do. So that's one thing, right? Why I'm saying, like, no, we're coming to you, we're having these conversations with you, because I'm dealing with you on a day-to-day basis. I'm not dealing with him collectively. Second, when it comes to shame, I love to remind people that shame is not a real emotion. That's a construct underneath colonial Christianity, right? And shame keeps us stuck. Well, I feel bad. There's nothing I can do. Woe is me. And we stop right there and we go in this shame spiral because I cannot affect change large enough, fast enough, or whatever that may be. Shame is quite literally meant to keep us stuck, and it's not real. And we know shame is not real because if you observe children, they haven't any, not a shred, not an iota of shame, right? Like your toddler will get up and like go pee in the middle of like Times Square with a million people watching them and be like, I did a good job, right? And come back to you with no shame, right? So that's something that's built in. That's yet another construct. So that's something that we could just like kind of I'm feeling shame. I can acknowledge it. I don't need to fix anything. I just need to acknowledge that it's there and it is a construct. What can move me forward, right? And then when we're talking about moving from allyship, which is, I love when you said that in the beginning, right? It's usually a self-appointed term. You cannot call yourself an ally. The people that you are dealing with directly can, right? I can say, I can name you an ally, and I still can only name you an ally to me. I could say Zahn is an amazing ally to me in this fight of social justice. I cannot say that you are an ally of all Black people. All Black people may not feel like that, right? One of the most dangerous things of supremacy culture is the demand of a monoculture, the demand of monolithic behavior, ideals, and that just doesn't work, right? So true solidarity comes from recognizing, well, hey, this is where your intersectionality meets my wall, right? And how do we go forward? Right. I hear what you're saying. I can absolutely admit that white men are absolutely your complete and utter oppressor, as they are mine, but understand that y'all are a package deal and you are your men. So you also oppress me. You cannot cross your party line. Let's think about it, right? Like your protest line. Come on over here and then go right back home to him. And we haven't done the work of sorting out what needs to happen between us socially, the awareness that needs to happen, and the admitting and the clearing of that space and the repair of that relationship collectively before we move forward into that solidarity. And then, even then, as I often tell white women, I would like to see white women offering the same grace that we as Black women offer to white women in this work to white men. And that, my friend, they stop hearing me. They're like, absolutely not. Hell no. I'm not doing it. I've tried. I've done all the things. He doesn't listen. And I'm sitting there like, so were you always this person? Or how many generations did it take you to get here? How many book clubs? How many conversations? How much system regulation did you need to even get to this point? And I'm trying to get you to the next phase. So there's so much there, so much.
Yes. Okay. I mean, there's so much that you've just said. Every time I talk to you, and like I'm including when like we're like folding laundry together on the phone, I feel like I have to start taking notes so that I can like go back and pull every thread that you have thrown at me. So
Well, to be fair, I did the same thing, right, in order to answer you. So I love our in-depth conversations, inclusive of our folding laundry and law and order chat. So
oh my God. Okay. Law and Order. I'm not going to go on Law and Order right now.
no, we'll do that later. I
I'm going to
haven't even caught up.
resist.
So,
Okay.
yes.
All right. So, but I want to circle back to this white man and grace thing because I think that's one of the harder things for people to swallow. And I think people often misinterpret what you mean. I'm not going to get to that yet, though. I want to address something else.
Okay.
The thing that I see, and I felt this in myself, and that not even in just social justice situations, but just in daily life, is that we all have this identity and we all want to hold our identities. We want to see ourselves as good people, as smart people, as moral people. And often our defense against wrongdoing is like, but I'm so good, but I'm an ally. And as soon as we start leaning on that identity rather than looking at our behavior, I think that's when we start to get in trouble. So I appreciate you talking about you can say this person is an ally to me, or maybe even this person is an ally to me in this context, rather than just giving someone a permanent label, because what that ends up being is like a permanent dispensation. It's like these feminist men who come into feminist groups and say all kinds of offensive shit, and they're like, but I'm a feminist and you're alienating me. So I hope that white women listening to this will understand why we have to judge people's behavior in the moment, not on these identities. But talking about like proximity and talking about how Black women and white women tend to have a lot more proximity to one another than, say, Black women to white men, as you mentioned. I had someone leave a comment on one of my posts a couple of months ago, and I've been thinking about it ever since. And I'm going to try to do it justice because I think she has something here. This is from a Black reader. I think, if I'm remembering it correctly. And what she said is that white women are not just separated from Black women, they're also separated from each other. They're separated from womanhood. They don't have community with one another because they are socialized their whole life to focus on men and specifically white men. And so, what that ends up meaning for white women is they actually have no idea what other women's lives are like, other white women's lives. So they're not able to look at the circumstances of their lives and apply a political critique. When parenting is hard for political reasons, they think it's a personal or a moral failing because their friends, if they have them, aren't in community with them and aren't talking to them about these realities. And I don't know, something about that to me kind of aligns with this notion that White women and Black women are in closer physical proximity to each other, but may not be actually talking meaningfully in the same way that white women are not meaningfully talking to other white women. So I guess my question to you is, do you agree? Do you think this is a thing that's happening with white women, or is my reader completely off base?
Your reader was preaching such a good word. I want you to find that reader. I want you to find them. I want you to inbox them. I want you to have a conversation with them on your podcast because, yes, exactly that, right? When we're talking about, right? Because I do, like, when I talk about it, I'm like, I pathologize the system of whiteness. And I'm actually having some beef right now on Substack because there was a clip of one of my conversations where I was like, you are both Charlie and Tyler. And I was saying, there are no good white people. And that is activated. So if you heard that now and you're activated, take a breath. Drink some water. It is not what you think. What it is saying, it is offering freedom because supremacy culture and colonial Christianity demands good and evil, right? That's the whole premise. So, like to your point of the white man walking in there and to be fumbling around, which is allowed when you're learning new paradigms, new ways of existing. And he's like, I am a feminist. It is a label. It is binary because you're either a feminist or you're not a feminist, right? That's that either or thinking inside of those 15 pillars of supremacy culture. You're either an ally or you are a racist. You're either anti-racist or you are racist. You're either MAGA or you're blue. And it's like it leaves no room for humility, for failure, for questioning, right? So they are, people are walking into these spaces and they are being admonished almost. And I try to remind people when I'm doing this work, critique is not admonishment. I am saying, hey, I need you to release this binary of good or bad, right? I let it go. You're gonna fuck up. You're gonna be human. You're gonna show up in this space where I am at. I seek to curate brave spaces, right? I got that terminology from Pam Iverson. I'm in a girls' growing group for years on Facebook, and she calls her spaces brave spaces, and they're safe, right? Because you have to feel safe in order to be brave. So you get to ask questions, you get to show up human. And whiteness as a system does not allow that. It's a constant performance of being good, of being the better wife, the better mother, the prettier girl. It's so to the point that your commenter made is exactly that. So you don't even understand what it's like to show up in spaces together, right? Like this competition against each other happens young, right? That mean girl culture, that what you see, like the dog eat dog world in corporate, like white man America transfers over into mean girl culture of white womanhood. And it does sever that relationship, that accessibility to each other. You click up, right? So here's the cool girls, here's not the fat girls, there goes this girls. And it severs that community gathering, that ability to see each other as whole. You're just not cool enough, or you're not cute enough, you're not popular enough. And that transfers even into your higher learning and education, you know, the myth of going to college to get your MRS. So your whole life is raised around how cute, how thin, how well off, hypergamy, performing what you need to perform to move up inside of those hierarchies in whiteness because classism impacts you guys the way racism impacts us. And so you're so busy not seeing each other, you damn sure can't see us. Basically, Black women move around white women's worlds like the help. Like
Yeah.
you don't notice the people, right? You don't notice the servers in the restaurant. You don't know what's going on in the back end. You know whether or not your food is good, right? I had this conversation this morning on my live about there's been conversation about comparing the it's laughable, comparing the No Kings March to the Civil Rights Movement. And I'm like, what? What?
It's bad.
What? It's happening right now. And I just gave one example of the Montgomery bus boycott. 381 solid straight days. 381. That's a year and some change every day, outside every day. You know what Black people did not do? They didn't miss work. kids still made it to school. And that took a lot of concerted community effort, right? For 381 days of sustained protesting. So when we're critiquing these things, when we're talking about community, it's all of that, right? So all of a sudden, here goes white women and they're coming out, and they're feminists and they're fighting against patriarchy. And they're like, we're with you, sister. And I'm like, with who? You don't even like, I often remind white women, you don't like your own poor. I can't trust you as long as you're still calling them white trash. Can't. Because you don't even understand how capitalism works and how it impacts them. So you could definitely not understand how my womanhood, my motherhood is political when you haven't understood how yours is. So, yes, absolutely. Hell yes to that commenter. It was amazing. She did great.
Well, good for her. I'll make sure to tell her. I was just thinking about the kind of like mean girl culture thing, and you and I were talking about this a little bit before we started recording. I've started, well, I won't say started. I've done this for a long time. I don't really know when I really started, but I kind of lead with vulnerability in my interactions with new people, and not in a where I'm putting like trauma on them, but I always acknowledge like things that are hard. So like if I'm at my kid's school and I'm meeting a new mom and we're at like the Halloween whatever, I might talk about like all this preparation that went into this, like it sure is a lot of work. And I noticed that there is a certain type of woman, always white, who will rebuff that and say, oh, it wasn't hard for me. It must just be you. And that behavior, that refusal to be vulnerable about things that we both know are objectively true, just maps so neatly onto so many other antisocial behaviors. So again, it's that refusal of community spirit that you're talking about.
And it's a denial of one's own humanity, right? Because whiteness, it demands a performance. Like it's okay. It was difficult, right? I'm here on this podcast, but in between, just to get here to sit in this moment, look at how many times we've rescheduled that. Life is difficult. Life is difficult, and that is okay. And that is part of what I mean about, like, I need white women to touch their humanity, their vulnerability. Like, it's okay. And that, to the other point of yours, is like that extension of that grace. That's me extending grace, right? And when I'm asking you to do the same thing to white men, it is saying, hey, Zahn, I'm recognizing that even though you are cute, adorable, and blonde, life is, right? Like, you're top tier white woman. Like, we could recognize that and still say life is difficult at your level,
You only think that
right?
because we have cameras off right now. You should see what my hair looks like. It's horrific. There's
Listen, I
parts
have a
making it look
milkmaid
white.
bun going on top of mine. So when you said no cameras, I was like, fuck yeah, I appreciate this. But what I'm saying is like, I could still recognize your humanity, right? I could still recognize that even though you are those things, right? Because whiteness relies on stereotypes. And what white people do not recognize is it stereotypes you first, right? It gives you the boxes first. This is how supremacy culture impacts you first, right? It has told you what womanhood is, right? It's told you that your highest purpose is to achieve marriage, children, a home, da 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 da. And then feminism came in and was like, you need to maintain all of those things and have a career. And it's like, golly. So that gets passed on to all of us. Right, because you guys are the curators of this culture that we're living in. So womanhood has always been defined by white womanhood. Manhood has been as well. And so when I'm saying extend that grace is I could say, hey, you know what, Zahn, your life may be easier in one aspect of supremacy culture and difficult in this one. And what does that look like? Me saying, hey, I could see that this is difficult for you. And me then saying, can you extend that to Jeff? Can you see that though he may be successful in X, Y, and Z, that this is tough to maintain for him? That he has to show up and perform manhood the same way you have to perform womanhood and wifeness and motherhood, and you do not ever get to drop the fucking ball. Neither does he. And that is the grace that we consistently have extended to white women. Like, listen, you're gonna drop the ball. You're gonna screw this up. You're not always gonna be anti-racist. You're damn sure not gonna be always anti-black. And we're still saying, show up. We will teach you, we will guide you. But white women too often meet us with defensiveness, like, no, because I'm an ally. And I'm like, okay, bye.
So, okay, you've talked a lot lately about the punitive nature of whiteness, and you've talked about this in the context of the way people react to your work. Now, this is something that also exists in male supremacy. But often white women who notice this punitive authoritarianism in male supremacy, who, for example, see how punitive their partners are with their kids, still take that punitive culture into their anti-racism and other activism work. And I want to give an example from your work that I actually just revisited this morning because I'm still mad about it. You wrote an article entitled "Jesus's Lord is a Battle Cry Against Empire." This was not an article really about Christianity or about how people should be Christian. It wasn't propaganda. But here comes this little white woman into your comments and throwing a tantrum, accusing you of propaganda based solely on the headline for the article that she did not read. And then she loudly announced that she would be unsubscribing. And a couple of people liked this comment. And I have to start with an apology because she was my subscriber first and I sent her to you. So, oops.
I do not blame you. I appreciate you sending people, and I recognize that they're going to have difficulty. I don't talk about easy topics. Carry on.
Well, so interestingly, I corrected her in the comments pretty gently. It was like two sentence correction. And she continued to subscribe to me even after she angrily unsubscribed to you, which I think that's an interesting just data point. But then, weeks, months, sometime later, she ran her mouth on my page too. And I gently corrected her on my page, and she did the same thing to me. Well, I'm unsubscribing now. And so this person has obviously bought into the notion that she should punish people for their ideas, and she should punish people with the only currency that matters in capitalism, which is money. And you know, people can subscribe to whoever they want. We're not entitled to anybody's affection or loyalty or money or subscription. But you know, throwing these public tantrums about, I don't like your headline, or I don't like it that you disagreed with me, so I'm going to make a big deal about how mad I am about it. That's what you've argued is related to white supremacy. So, can we talk a little bit about this punitive policing aspect of white supremacy and how we just end up like eating our own tails with it?
Oh God, yes, absolutely. And like you said, like you tied it into, right? Let me try to wrap this up in a bun. White women will always see that as part of patriarchy, right? And but patriarchy is merely a branch of the tree of supremacy culture, right? Similar to racism, classism. And we are trying to dig up the root and just replant something different. So it comes from that colonial Christian view, right? Like I said, again, of that binary of that good and evil, heaven or hell, punishment or bliss. And instead of, it's very interesting to me because the white women that do this on a regular basis will inevitably be claim themselves to be allies, gentle parents, all of these, really cool buzzwords, all of the woke leftist language will be thrown around. And I'm like, so do you punish your children? I mean, like you said, I do agree that I'm not entitled to anybody's money, anybody's space, anybody listening to you. Do what you need to do for you. I remind people to choose themselves all the time. Do what you need to do. At least make it an informed decision. I know that you didn't read that article and come to that conclusion, but alas. That punitive nature is something that gets passed down, right? Whiteness as a system is a cycle of abuse, right? Husband smacks wife smacks kids, kids kick dogs. Like shit rolls downhill. So this idea of, you can only have this if you're making me feel good is always around us in all of the ways where She could have got curious in this very specific thing and said, okay, I am, one reader who I absolutely loved was like, so I was activated by this and I didn't read it. I was like, good job, basically. That was the gist of it. And I may revisit it, but I don't want to right now. But I am going to sit with it and get curious. And that's what I ask for people to do. And that's how you move away from the punishment. Right. Like, is $8 a month killing you? If you've liked 10 of my other articles and you didn't like this one, like, you want to, it's like the baby with the bathwater sort of thing. And what it does is it demands another performance, right? Because whiteness, like I said, demands performance. What I was supposed to do was say, oh no, how could I make this better for you and be comfortable? Now, when you add in a racial dynamic, what it feels like for me and my body is you want me to tap dance for you? Oh no, massa, I shows will fix that right on up for you, missy. No, like carry on. By all means, block me. Do yourself the favor because you're going to be consistently uncomfortable. So when people come up to that, I just ask them to get curious. Like, what do you, why? Why do you want to harm someone? Because that's what it is. You have to see that as a violent act. Like you said, no, we're not entitled to anybody's money. But if you have been receiving information that has been good for you all of this time, and something has activated in you, something got your hackles up, something you need to take a breath with and lean into, why not get more curious? Why question your own self? Why do you want to punish this person? Why do you want to bring harm to them? Right. A follow-up to that was when I had spoke about Charlie and Tyler being both inside of whiteness, right? I lost so many people. I was like, here is, here's my offering right now. I'll give you 31% off. Prices are going up. I'm not doing this with you guys. I say something that you don't like, I lose 10, 15 people. People unsubscribe all the time. That is not sustainable. Why do you want to punish people? That is the question that you have to ask. Why? Why do you want to be harmful? And then you want those same people to understand how patriarchy is punitive and punishing you, yet you will pass along that violence. Get
Got it.
curious.
Yeah. Yes. That's all I know to say. Yeah.
No, I don't even know if I answered you fully, but those
No,
are the
you did.
words that came up. Okay, good.
So, but I have kind of like a reciprocal question to this. So I'm really interested, and I actually had a piece come out today when we're recording this. It'll be old news by the time this recording comes out about converting white women, bringing them into leftist politics. And I've had some pretty good luck doing this. And when I say pretty good luck, I mean I fail 99% of the time because it's so fucking hard. But I'm thinking about this punitive spirit that often happens and the defensive spirit. And if we're gonna convert people, we have to be mindful that this is what comes out. So my question is, do you have any insight on what white women like me, who are working with other white women, can do to not activate that punitive spirit and to instead get to the person behind it?
I would say that you have to know that you're going to activate that, right? It's kind of like when I'm talking to people about white supremacy, anti-racism work, I'm like, you guys keep looking for the shark, right?
Yeah.
Oh, there it is, there it is. And I'm like, no, supremacy culture is the water that we swim in, right? So everybody's in it, the shark, the coral reef, the anemones, tiny fish, big fish, little fish, the sand, we're all in it. We're just all in it and it's all around. So I would say prepare that it's coming, right? Here's what it is. I am never shocked by it. Never.
Yeah.
I think why I have such sustainability in this work is because I fully expect it. Chris Rock had a joke 1,000 years ago, and I'm going to botch it. But he basically, the premise of it was he's like, if I am sitting next to a white person and they took a pencil and stabbed me in my neck, I would say, my bad, I shouldn't have had my neck out. Because you anticipate it, right? Like it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen sooner or later. It's gonna be uncomfortable. So for me, when I have those spaces, I just know that that's gonna happen. And this is exhausting. This is why there are Black-only spaces. The same way there are women-only gyms, women-only dating spaces, is because you want to be outside of the male gaze, right? I don't want to go to the gym and be hit on. I don't even want to go to the gym and have the possibility of being hit on. This is why Black-only spaces exist. I don't want the white gaze. I do, because you're gonna have to anticipate it. That's my whole point. The whole point of that is you have to anticipate that if you are in the spaces with these people, you are going to be harmed, right? If you are in a relationship with an abuser, you're going to be abused. And white women have an issue with taking on the role of recognizing that they are an abuser in this system of supremacy culture. So if you're going to have proximity to an abuser, you have to anticipate being abused. That's what it is. You go into it knowing I'm probably going to get my teeth kicked. How do
God,
I avoid that?
it's an ugly reality. Okay,
Right.
so.
It's unfortunate. I'm sorry. Take a breath. But that's the truth, right? I love you. I will not be surprised if something you do and or say would be harmful. Where the repair, though, because I want to offer that really quickly before we go into anything else, where the repair is, right, where that problem, that tension that exists is, I fully expect as a white woman, you are going to say something that is going to aggress me, harm me, be anti-Black, all of the things. Where the restoration and repair is between you and I is me being able to say, hey, Zon, when you said that, this is what it activated in me, and I'm able to explain why the pedagogy behind it, the suppression, the cultural, the systemic issues, and I need you to receive that. That's what makes you safe.
Right.
Not that you'll never fuck up, is
Yeah.
that you're willing to do the repair. You're willing to sit with it. Even if you can't hear it in that moment, says, you know what? I don't know about that. I need to sit with that. Great. Please reflect. Come back to me. It's the restoration and the repair where white women mess up in that intersectional relationship is me saying that to you, and you say, absolutely not, Desiree. I have five other Negroes that would say different. And I'm like, well, go be friends with them.
Contact
We're done.
information.
Do you? Well, my friend said, and I don't give a shit what your friend said. I'm telling you something, and that's super important. So there you go. That's where I land on that.
This is completely unrelated to what you just said, but it just reminded me of this story, and I do talk about dating, so I'm gonna share it anyway, and you can share your horror. So early in Jeff's and my relationship, like 3 months in, we went out with his sister and we both drank too much and we got in a dumb fight. Like, not an abusive fight, just a really stupid fight where, like, whatever the central thing was that we were fighting about, like, was something that didn't even exist, like people do. And so he went back to his apartment for like the night, and I went back to my place, and I was devastated. I was convinced we were going to break up, and it was a horror, and it was just the end, and I just could not cope. So I contacted like five of my friends, and I got them to write statements about me, countering what we were fighting about to
My
prove him
Lord,
wrong. And I emailed
carry on.
him, along with like, a statement of facts, and like I called it like my motion for summary judgment on our relationship. And it remains one of the most like banana crackers things I have ever done, but it was also really effective. So I promise I will not do that to you.
That is wild. Please don't ever do that to me. And I think that what that shows is just the monolithic demand of supremacy culture, right? Like white womanhood is so violent to white women and femmes underneath This is hetero Christian white male patriarchy, right? It demands for you to never be wrong, never falter, always be pretty, always be performing. It's exhausting. I would never want to be a white woman. I'm just not, right? And it's like because that competition is built in, it's like, oh no, there's going to be somebody that's more agreeable to him that wouldn't argue with these things. All of that comes into play. And that fear. Right, because now you found someone, right? Because also supremacy culture disconnects us from self, right? The land and community. And this person is the one person you should be cleaving to because he's my man and I'm gonna stand by my man. And this is also the reason why community is so important, right? Like, because yes, I'm very much a my man, my man, my man girly, but my friends, my family, my children, and myself. And that is the full breadth of humanity. All of those things exist at the same time. And whiteness as a system demands fealty to a concept, to a person, to this one way of being, right? Again, if people do nothing else, please go and download my very pay what you can 15 pillars of supremacy culture, understanding them and how to dismantle them, because you will recognize how they play in your life. And it is a foundational work to dismantling oppressive systems. It is a necessity to recognize what comes up there is that only one right way, right? There's only one way of being a person, only one way of being a woman, only one way of being a friend, and it constantly demands performance. And then that defensiveness comes up, right? Des, no, because when I said that to so and so, that's not how they received it, and that's not real. That's fine, but they don't have those lived experiences that I have. I'm going to come to this situation with mine the way I anticipate you coming with yours. And we are having an individual interpersonal relationship. It is not your relationship with all Black women. It is your relationship with me in front of you. And as long as that repair work is there, right, that willingness to show up in your humanity, and that is really what anti-oppression work is about, is offering people a path back to their own humanity and releasing these constructs. So yeah, there you go.
I love that. That's beautiful. And I just want to echo, please do download The Pillars of White Supremacy. It has helped me understand so many of the interactions that I have with people, especially in the work I do. You and I actually talked about this a year ago, I think, where like every time I do an AMA, I'll get all kinds of interesting questions, but I will also get people asking me about these kind of like trivial side issues or about topics that are just like not my topics, not things that I know a lot about. And it's very clear based on the way those questions are framed that what they're doing is testing me to see if I'm the right kind of feminist, to see if I have the right opinion on lipstick. That's one that comes up all the time.
On lipstick, I
Yeah,
can't. I
oh my
can't.
God, of all the things I write about, the two things that make people unsubscribe the most are beauty and diet culture and sex work. You know, any opinion that differs on those issues and people want you dead. They just do. And
It's a searcher.
it's this purity culture. And I don't mean purity in the sexual purity. I mean this idea that you have to be the one true feminist, the one true activist who gets everything right according to this one person's weird
But see,
definition of what
all of
everything
that right
is.
there is built into what I'm saying is that
Yeah,
monoculture, that supremacy
exactly.
culture, right? That colonial Christianity. Because like, how could you stand by and talk about and say sex work is work? Because I'm saying it's a job. Because
Yeah.
I said it. That's out. So
Well, and like,
simple.
how is that? I mean, even if you, like, regardless of how you feel about sex work, like, it's obviously a job because you're getting paid for it. Like, this should not be controversial, but oh Lord, is it controversial? It just really upsets people. So, understanding the perfectionism of white supremacy has really helped me understand that behavior and, of course, the policing actions that go with it. So, thank you. It's a wonderful contribution. Everything you write is a wonderful contribution.
Appreciate that.
So I think we're probably going to wrap it up here, except I have one final question for you. And that is, I think the thing that we're going to focus more sharply on, but we end up talking about all this other stuff. How do we bring the right-wing white women over? What do we do?
Oh my God, what a wonderful question. And I think it's going to touch on what we were talking about before, kind of like the deserving, like the right kind. It goes back to grace, Zahn, right? Like, none of us were here, right? I am a completely different person than I was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, right? I remind people that, when I was sitting in my sociology class at 18 years old, I was a white Republican woman. Swear to God, I swear to God, I swear to God. I had all of the talking points, right? Slavery ended hundreds to 300 years ago. Like, what are you doing? Nobody's stopping you. All of the indoctrination that comes with American exceptionalism and the pseudo educational system that we talk about, right? At 20 something years old, I didn't even know what redlining is. And now look at me, all militantly black and educating, right? So it's about creating those brave spaces and those safe spaces and releasing the binary. What I tell people is for decolonization work, your very first step is releasing that binary because there's no safe space. And I look at whiteness as a system as in IPV, right? Like that in partner violence or domestic violence in my day, it was called. And it takes on average 7 times to escape that. Right. But in order for people to leave DV situations, there has to be safety nets inside of society and in community, right? Like, where are they going? How are they going to eat? How are they going to survive? What white people, leftist white people, woke white people forget, well, they're voting against their best interest. No. It's worked, it's been working. For thousands of years, to side with patriarchy, to side with the regime that we're currently seeing, it has worked for them. It is survival. They have learned the very bare ability to survive this very violent system. So, if you're asking people to leave those spaces, you have to create spaces where they can land, where they can ask questions, where they can be wrong. Where we can turn around and say, holy shit, I'm agreeing with Marjorie Taylor Greene. Shoot me, but she's right. Right? And giving her kudos on that. Give her her flowers. She's right on what she's saying. Oh, well, she's only right because it's about to be midterms. I don't give a shit why she's right. I don't care what motivated her, right? How do you make a safe base to move her?
Yeah, let's
Right?
bring her in.
Let's say, okay, well, okay, let's go. Let's take that one step further, Marjorie. You notice that. Can you notice something else? Can you see how this works with that? And she may say, uh-huh, she may say no, but that's the grace. Because you were once Marjorie Taylor Greene, too. The birth canal of whiteness is the alt-right. Right? Like some white people that think that they're leftists are centrist at best. At best.
Yeah.
Compared to others that have been doing this work generationally, at best, right? When I see people like when it was, the Biden versus Trump, I was like, y'all are the same to me. You talking about Biden with 50 years of racist policy. Trump is an idiot. You know what I'm saying? We can't quantify harm. You can't quantify racism. You can't quantify anti-Semitism. You just simply have to say it shouldn't exist. And what are we going to do to dismantle it? And that's going to take a lot of grace. That's going to take a lot of humility. That's going to take a lot of work generationally. And you have to make space for people to be wrong. You have to allow them in. And you have to say everyone is worthy, right? Every person is worthy of that. No, not every person is deserving. I will land it right here is that so inherent worth is inherent. We are all born worthy of being free from oppression. Not everybody is deserving of being in the spaces that you are curating, right? You have to, like where I said, if you agree with me, which will happen because we're human, right? But if I bring it to you and you're not willing to do the repair work, you don't deserve my presence. It's that simple. You do not deserve access to me because you're harmful to me, not because you're less than me, not because you're unworthy, not because I think you trash, but you're not willing to do the repair work with me. So therefore, you do not deserve access to me. That has to be earned. You're worth it, but you haven't done the work to have access. So that is how I would say, use your discernment when you're offering grace to people is, anticipate that you're going to be harmed in this work. If you are doing this work of any type of anti-racism, pro-humanity, anti-oppression, if you're doing this work with your husbands, with your friends, anticipate being harmed because these systems have been going for thousands of years. So anticipate that, but offer the grace, and the grace says, do this restoration and repair work with me. If they are not willing to do it, cut them off. They are harmful to you, and they have no desire to actually be in true community with you, and they will just continue to do harm to you.
I
You
think
could
that's
leave an access point, but that's about it.
amazing advice. I love
Thank
that.
you.
And I love encouraging us all to reflect on our own wrongness, the times that we have been wrong, the ways that we have evolved, because it's so easy for us to judge other people, and it's often very difficult for us to judge ourselves.
Yes, very much so. There's a whole idea, right? A whole psychological pedagogy in regard to how we perceive ourselves, right? I would love to pretend I have always been this person, right? This evolved, this calm, this woke, and that's just not true. And to negate that truth is to deny my own humanity and to deny my growth, right? A lot of you guys have done some heavy hitting movements, right? And like really evolved to this space. And to pretend that you've always been there really, really cuts you off from your own self and really just doesn't even allow you your humanity in that. I love sharing those stories. I love being aware of how wrong I was in the past because it reminds me of how human I am and how evolutionary I am and how much we can grow when we are so willing to show up as our true selves.
That's beautiful and perfect. And I love you as always. I'm so glad that I got to have you on again. Thank you for coming. And I will
Thank you.
be back next week with our next episode. So thank you for listening.